A foodie is defined as a person who has an ardent or refined interest in food and who eats food not only out of hunger, but due to their interest or hobby. And two of my favorite foodie-related people are joining me on MSU Today today to talk about all things food. We have Cheryl Kirschenbaum with us. She's Executive Director of Science Debate. She's the host of WKAR's Serving Up Science with Karel Vega, and she works at the intersection of climate, food, energy, and politics. Cheryl, great to have you back on the show.
Thank you for having me back, Russ.
And Kurt Kwiatkowski, much better known as just Chef Kurt, is MSU's corporate chef. And Kurt, also great to have you back on MSU today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for
Let's
having me.
Let's start with you a little bit, Cheryl. What does that mean? Tell us a little bit more about you and what you do.
Well, I work in a lot of different spaces. My background is I'm trained as a scientist, I guess, but I haven't been working in science or working in research for a long time. So after graduate school in oceans, actually in marine biology and policy, I worked in D.C. for a while, translating a lot of the science into how that moves into the policy realm and the decisions we make. And I've been working in kind of the space between science, politics, and people for the last, well, over a decade now. And so that translates into a lot of my work. And what I do here at Michigan State is I work at the intersection of food and people. So we've got, especially at a university like this, all of this incredibly cool research happening all around campus and all around the world. And I try to tell some of those stories, both on WKAR Serving Up Science and in the work we do at Food at MSU.
And we're going to talk about food at MSU a little bit more. But Kurt, also tell us, as your role at Corporate Chef, you've got your hands into a lot of things in this big place. Tell us more about what you do.
Yeah, so I think that every day is an adventure. It's different. So we have 9 residential dining units that are all you care to eat. And I guess the best part of my job is the team that I get to work with every day, and the interactions that you get with our guests. It's pretty fascinating. And looking at where we've come from the last like 11, 12 years to where we are today, it's fascinating. So you have a residential dining piece, you have a retail piece that includes a food truck, and we have a grocery store on campus. We've got a new branded concept at the International Center, which is a barbecue concept that also includes concessions. So Spartan Stadium, Munn, Breslin, out at the Ag Pavilion. So it's very broad. And then you have the partnerships with different academia, whether it's the School of Hospitality Business, working with the MSU Meat Lab, and the farms that are here on campus, too, to figure out how we can better work with what's going on campus, and then to also tell that story, whether it's with the RISE program over at Bailey Hall or the student organic farm that's out on campus. And, you know, how can we support that and then help grow that? And if a student has a passion for something and wants to explore that, what does that look like? And then how do we tell that story?
Well, and Chef Kurt, one of the hot topics in the food industry these days is local food and farmers markets, and you're a fan.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of it. Absolutely. You know, and I've made some great friendships in meeting the local farmers and being able to go out there and talk with them and to learn something. You know, I may know how to saute and chop and do different things like that, and my background is not the right way to plant and to grow. I don't have a green thumb, or maybe my green thumb is, and I've tried to grow plants in back, but the deer and all the critters seem to like it. But I think, again, I enjoy that interaction and walking to the market and going and seeing the same people that I get to see, or and it's hearing that story about what they're doing and how they're doing. And to me, that's fascinating.
And Cheryl, you're a fan as well, but buyer beware, a little caution too.
Well, I'd first say you can find me at a farmer's market almost every weekend, sometimes both days of the weekend, because just the ability to kind of get to know the people who are producing food in our community, and not just professionally but socially, has been a real treat and something I value so much living here in Michigan. Something I guess I would just add is I really like to support local farms. I know a lot of local farmers. They've given me some tips in my garden, although the squirrels tend to get our everything too. I've been rotating my tomatoes this year thanks to some tips, actually. But it's interesting because from a sustainability standpoint, which is more my background, conservation and sustainability, I like to support things that are always, you know, the best environmental choice as well. And so often it is the local option because there's less of a transportation, energy cost. Smaller farms can be more efficient sometimes, but sometimes it's not. So it's often product dependent. You wouldn't grow something that needs a really hot climate locally in Michigan in December and expect you're going to have the same energy impact for both of those things. So there's a lot more to kind of figuring out, I guess, some of the trade-offs involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And too, and I, you know, with some of the technology that we have and the advancements that have happened, you know, what, and I think it's more me maybe understanding it, maybe not advancements, maybe it's just advancements of myself, but the hoop house technology and tasting spinach from the middle of dead winter and the carrots that are grown. It's like some of the best spinach and the best carrots you're ever going to have. And it, you know, understanding why too, it's just really, really neat stuff. But yeah, there are certain things you're just not going to grow in the middle of winter here. And I think working to tweak your menu and change in flux to the best of our ability so we can enjoy those things all year round, but the things that can grow all year round, but then the things that can't, you enjoy them when you can.
And there's always something that's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're supporting the local economy when you support local food as well as get it possibly more nourishing. And I know, Kurt, too, the wine and the craft beer industries are exploding, too, in Michigan.
They're huge. And I would also add to that the craft distilleries are absolutely exploding. I think the wine industry has expanded greatly in Michigan, and now the craft beer industry then had a big boom. And now you're seeing the craft distilleries really, really expanding and what you can get. And you can pretty much get just about everything that would be at least produced here in Michigan. I mean, heck, there's even a program now at MSU for, I think it's beer and distilling, which is pretty fascinating.
I'm guessing pretty popular, too.
I would think so.
We're talking food on MSU today with Cheryl Kirschenbaum and Chef Kurt, and we are in the heart of the barbecue season. And Kurt, maybe I'll ask you to share a couple of maybe favorite things you like to cook and maybe some grilling tips and
sure.
Multi-part question. But what are some of the common grilling mistakes that people do as well?
I think some of the biggest mistakes I always see is they rush it and they think it's only going to take a certain amount of time, whether it's you know, a pork shoulder or a brisket or something like that, or even something that just needs to be cooked, whether it's a beautiful bone-in porterhouse pork chop or something like that. And it's getting the coals to the right temperature and understanding that and understanding direct heat and indirect heat and how to utilize that. Understanding the wind and the rain and, you know, probably my favorite things is pretty much all pork related. I use these boxes to cook pig roasts, and they're called Caja Chinas. And, you know, it's been fun because I've done three in the last 3 days. And it's anywhere from a 10 to 12 hour process. And but in the end, the product that comes out is pretty fascinating. But to rush that process, you shortchange yourself. And that it's all about the cue when you go to Texas or someplace like that or the Carolinas. Each place has its own distinct flavors and distinct ways about doing things. But it's really knowing that it takes a lot longer than what you think.
I think, too, Kurt, a lot of people in my experience do overcook their hamburgers, however. Geez.
And I'd say for that, the two rules of thumb that I always tell people are don't press it. Do not press. You're pressing out everything. And don't stab it to temp it or poke at it. No poking, no stabbing, no pressing. I think it's been proved that, you know, if you're going to put the piece of meat on, you've got about maybe 15 seconds where you could press to get a good hard sear. But on a grill, you don't have to worry about that. That would be more for in a skillet or on a flat top, on a like a plancha or a flat griddle. But for a grill, don't press it because you're going to end up pressing the meat right through the grills. You're just kind of wasting it away.
And what about some safety tips outside? I think people maybe leave stuff out longer, or do either of you have some just some common sense food safety tips for summer?
I guess I can add a few, but I'm sure Chef Kurt knows far more than I do. The general rules I go by are, keep things separate. I think oftentimes we're prepping things and the juices can mix up, and that's a pretty common way people get foodborne illness. Keep your work area as clean as possible because things can stay and linger, and bacteria breeds very quickly. Cook it to the appropriate temperature, and you can go to foodsafety.gov and see what that is. Although, talking to Chef Kurt here, you might not want to poke it with a thermometer too much. And then just remember to chill things. Refrigeration is important, and it can do a lot to keep all those bad bacteria at bay.
Yeah. And I think a couple of things to add is wash your hands. And then along with the chilling process, keep that food kind of flattened out as much as possible and don't wrap it all the way up. Like if it's hot and you haven't eaten it and then you throw it in a bag you seal that bag, you're locking in and it's going to be very difficult for that food to get down to temp within an appropriate amount of time. And so that the bacteria can quickly replicate in a sealed environment.
Cheryl, can you tell us a little bit more about the Food at MSU initiative? What is that?
Sure. Food at MSU began as a different kind of conversation about food because universities are really good at telling people what to do and putting faculty and researchers in front of groups and saying, here's how you should think about things and these are the steps you should take. And that's not interacting, right? Like that's not learning in a way where we're all part of the conversation and asking questions. So Food at MSU and Our Table is an initiative on campus that's going around the state, just really having conversations about a variety of topics, from how we'll feed more than 9 billion people in 2050 to what's important to know about food safety. We've covered a lot of different issues already. We have another one coming up in Port Huron in a few weeks. And it's been real interesting. We're learning as we go, but it's been fun to meet people and especially to bring in people to the conversation, like hopefully one day Chef Kurt. And we've had some farmers and some medical professionals, and then of course faculty and folks involved in community farms and sustainability and food security.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the topics that's really stuck with me at one of your Our Tables is how much food we waste. That's really something we have to get our arms around, isn't it?
It really is. And, even when I go into every kitchen that I go into, the first thing I do is I look in the coolers to see how things are rotated. And then I look in our food waste bins to see what's getting thrown away. There's a chef that I know that works in New York City, Jahangir Mehta. And he's kind of rated as one of the most sustainable chefs by the Michelin company. And, taking some of his ideas and how can we at MSU, he has a dish on his menu called compost soup. And so it changes all the time. So it's not like taking your raw compost, but it's all your vegetable scraps. And taking that idea and how can we, instead of just doing things the same way we're doing things. And I think we're starting to evolve, and it's really important to look at that.
Because Cheryl, isn't it up to 40% that we waste, something like that? A stunning figure.
Yeah, the estimate is between the high 30s and nearly half of the food we grow gets tossed. And that accounts for a lot of water and energy and carbon emissions and things we can change today that would have a huge impact on sustainability, efficiency, the environment. MSU has done a good amount of work in the last decade plus to do more at our dining halls. We have an anaerobic digester, and there's a lot we can do personally to make a pretty big difference as well. But it's a huge, huge issue, and we can always do better.
Well, and I think one of the things we've also done is people don't realize how much food is wasted like on the seconds, because people want to see the perfect zucchini or the perfect tomato, and they don't want to see this odd grown tomato, or even like heirloom tomatoes to me are just beautiful to look at. And I want all the ones that they don't bring to market. And working with our produce companies to say, we will take what we can, obviously like rotted food we're not going to, but if it's blemished and things like that, let's work with it instead of it just getting tossed into a heap and then most of the time thrown away. And that's just not a good thing. And the upside for us is it saves us some money. But the bigger upside, more globally, is we're just not throwing it away. And it's really important.
And I'll add just an optimistic note to that. One of the things we do from Food at MSU is we put out the MSU Food Literacy and Engagement Poll.
Yes.
And that surveys about 2,000 Americans every 6 months to track attitudes and preferences on all sorts of food topics, from labels, which I'm sure we could go on on that one for a while, to a focus of our last wave, which was food waste. And some encouraging news that we found was it was in the 80s, I think it was in the high 80s, close to 90% of Americans are conscious of trying to reduce their food waste. At least they say so. Obviously, behavior is always a little bit different than how people self-report. But in surveys, that's a remarkably high number. There was a poll a handful of years ago out of the National Academies that reported, I believe, 76% of Americans correctly answered the question that the Earth goes around the sun. So once you're in the 80s for any kind of survey, that is high. So at least we're paying attention. And there's new technologies coming online that are going to allow us to do even better.
Hear, hear. Chef Kurt, I'm wondering, do you watch the Food Network?
I can honestly say not much. Just not much. I think, yeah, I'm more the person that wants to practice it, and it's very therapeutic for me. And so I have friends of mine that are acquaintances. I won't go so far as to say they're good friends, but I would say they're acquaintances. And it's been really cool to see their careers just explode. You know, someone like Jet Tila, who I've known for, you know, more of as an acquaintance, but I've known him for probably 12 years. And from where he was to where he is now, I'm just an outstanding guy. And he really cares about passing knowledge on to people. And it doesn't surprise me to see the success that he's had. And, you know, you look at chefs that I've had the chance to work with, like someone like Jeremiah Tower, who was the big rock star chef before it was even a big thing. And he was such a instrumental person in looking at picking the perfect food and working his work with Chez Panisse and working with the local farmers and then treating it. And it's not about trying to do 10, 15 different things to it. Just treat it the right way and cook it the right way and lightly season it. And now you've got something delicious, because we don't want to mask that. We want to taste that. And I think it's really, it's always interesting to hear people feedback. You know, I think that with how much information is available to us, it's scary. I mean, it's great, but it's scary because I don't think it paints the true picture sometimes of what it's like to work in the industry.
So what's your advice for young people who want to maybe be a chef like you or work in the food industry in some way that we've been discussing?
I think you have to be passionate about it. I think that you're not going to get this overnight fame or something like that. You're not going to be at the top of the pile. You have to work your way through it. And just because you go to school for it doesn't mean that you're given all the tools. You're given the tools, but now you have to put them into practice. And now you have to display those and you have to build. It's all about practice, 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 and getting it down. You hear someone like Rick Bayless say, it took me 10 years to create the perfect mole. And Thomas Keller, you know, it's 10, 12 years or whatever it was to roast the perfect chicken. It's to take that mentality to say, it's good, but maybe I can make it a little bit better. What else can I do? You know, I have a saying in the research development kind of corporate kitchen. It's the just one more. Instead of trying to take big leaps forward and big, huge strides, it's let's just kind of try and put one foot in front of the other to increase and to make ourselves a little bit better.
And Kurt, I'm wondering what's maybe coming new to the stadium. People, you said earlier you put all the food in the stadium too. Is there anything in the residence halls or Spartan Stadium new this year?
Two big things will be new and very, very interesting. I'm excited and like a little like, wow, I can't believe we're going to do this type thing. We have closed Owen Hall, the dining facility there, and we are in the process of cleaning it. And it will reopen in July, and it will be called Thrive. And this will be a completely allergen-free of the top 8+2 of all the food that we serve. So no food will hit our back dock that has any of those. And we will be serving all that. And people go, oh, my God, what are you going to serve? And it's like, we're going to serve delicious food. And we're going to have three different platforms. And one of them is going to be kind of like your comfort food, center of the plate, you know, protein, vegetable, starch, et cetera. We're going to have one that's street food from around the world, street food kind of things. And then we're going to have one that's chicken tender. So like the number one seller at Owen before we closed was chicken tender. So I said, all right, I've got an idea, you know, and people that have a gluten intolerance or celiac and, you know, they haven't been able to eat chicken tenders. And it's like, well, okay, now I want to create the perfect chicken tender, number one. And now we're going to make it, you know, dairy-free, egg-free, soy-free, and gluten-free. And so we've created it and we're in the process of fine-tuning it a bit. And so that's a huge project that you know, it's a big team that's doing all that. And then at the stadium, we're going to have the, I think it's going to be called the Lower Bowl. And so we're going to be offering Grain Bowl that will be allergen friendly. So that will be all allergen for, you know, friendly. Obviously, we can't control the environment, but we can control the food that's going out. And so we'll have three different bowl options. It will be a jasmine wild rice blend with you can have a chicken, you can do a beef, or it will be a vegan, a blend of cauliflower and chickpeas that are roasted. So it's pretty exciting. Yum. For the stadium. You know, you think about stadium food. Sure.
Yeah, brats and hot dogs and...
And I think of the 70-some thousand that come to visit Spartan Stadium, you know, they're a big majority of people want that Spartan dog, and that's fine. But now we're trying to reach that 15 to 20% that they can still have a great experience. Or, you know, hot dog doesn't quite work for me. Ooh, a grain bowl. This is great.
Unless it's pork, right, Kurt?
Yeah.
Just in general, Kurt, are there some trends in particularly summer barbecuing or in general that are or something on the horizon?
I would say the biggest trends in the food industry these days is the bowls, like grain bowl options, and looking at going beyond quinoa and looking past that and what does that look like? Looking at other grains like sorghum and different things like that. Sorghum's a great grain. It's got texture to it. And different rices that we can grow and already are growing here in the U.S. are pretty neat. And I would say the idea of plant forward. Not saying that it's vegan, but it's more plant forward. It's more about the vegetable, putting the vegetable in the center of the plate. Our country is one of the last to come around to that idea and that concept where meat is an accent, or that animal-based protein is the accent as opposed to the center of the plate. And I see a big shift in that in numerous restaurants. And you're seeing it more on the coasts, and it's coming in. Which is great to see, but I think the openness to that is here, and it's exciting to see.
I'm curious if you've tried any of the new meat alternatives like Impossible Burger or cell cultured meat.
Yeah, we actually have been serving the Impossible Burger at Breslin all of last year, and we've been serving up Beyond Meat Burger in our dining facilities now for about a year and a half. And I find them good and they're pretty neat. And in talking with a lot of our students, you know, you have different levels of people that look at that and they're like, I just want to eat the vegetables. And so how can we maybe come up with our own is my next big thing that I want to come up with our own patty that we would serve across campus. And it's been a fun process. And we're getting there. It's not about making it bleed or anything like that. You know, looking at the heme that's in there from the Impossible Burger. To me, I still say, does it look appetizing? And does it taste good? And if it looks appetizing, people are going to look at getting it. If the taste and the flavor and the texture are there, they're going to come back for it. If we can't hit those marks, then we need to keep on doing our research and development to find it.
Impossible Foods is one I've been watching for a long time. That was a startup out of the Bay Area. I actually know some of the folks that were working there, and they've exploded in the last year. You can find their products at White Castle and
Burger King.
and it's neat because it's built on the principle of the way we've been raising meat isn't that great in terms of sustainability. Yeah. And, you know, we can find some alternative ways to satisfy those needs while at the same time promoting more of a plant-based meat alternative. And in terms of our health, I wouldn't say the Impossible Burgers are lower in fat or anything like that. But overall, if we're looking to move to a more plant-based diet, it's probably better for our bodies as well at a time when so many Americans are suffering from the consequences and health issues related to unhealthy diet. So,
you know, and there's another company called Just. I don't know, I'm sure you're familiar with, but the Just Egg product or the Just Mayo, and how they've created the chicken tender from the feather of the chicken, which is a pretty phenomenal, interesting research thing. Now, granted, that chicken tender, I think, cost them like $100, but, you know, over time, maybe that'll change. And where is that going to go? And what does that look like? And it's kind of a different thought process, which is exciting to see.
So Cheryl, tell us about Serving Up Science, where you explore a lot of these topics.
Well, on Wednesday afternoons, Carell Vega and I explore a different topic each week. And it's just a short series of episodes, and we cover, let's see, last week, what did we do? We had an episode on eggs. So a lot of people have been asking us, what's the difference between cage-free and free-range, and what label should I even be looking for? And we've talked a lot about labels and how confusing they are, and how a lot of it's marketing versus what we need to know, and where the important information is. So on the egg episode, we talked a little bit about what some of those terms mean. But some of the episodes are more serious, gene editing, CRISPR and food, what some of the ag research looks like, especially here at MSU. And some of the episodes are lighter and more fun, like we did Whatever Happened to Crystal Pepsi, which is one of my favorites. So we have a lot of fun doing that series, and I look forward to continuing.
And just tell us before we let you go what Science Debate is. Your executive director.
Science Debate is a nonprofit that I've been working with and have co-founded back in 2008. And we simply work to get candidates running for president to address science issues prior to when we vote. It's built on a body of political science research that demonstrates our elected leaders feel strongly tied to the policy commitments they make publicly before they're in office, and that has an important agenda-setting role for their administration. So prior to this year, we've been asking them questions, and we've gotten written responses. This year, we're working on a live event, so hopefully we'll have more to share on that soon.
And is that sciencedebate.org?
Yes, all the information's at sciencedebate.org.
And by the way, we are part of, you know, Michigan State University is a part of the Healthy Menus of Change Collaborative. That's a partnership with the Culinary Institute of America and the Harvard Chan Business School. So it's a pretty neat group to be a part of.
Congratulations. Cheryl, final thoughts as we roll through the summer on food topics?
I hope everyone has a really delicious summer. There's so many new opportunities as the sun comes out and we can enjoy food outside with friends and community. So bon appetit.
Well, thank you both for joining us. I hope you have enjoyed talking food as much as I have with Cheryl Kirschenbaum. You can follow Cheryl on Twitter at @SHERIL_. And Chef Kurt is a Chef_Kurt, K-U-R-T. Kurt is the corporate chef at Michigan State University. So thank you both for talking food today.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today. I'm Russ White.